he's right here, so. Oh, he topped it. He cold topped it.
Okay. Ready to go. Yeah.
Gate iron.
Oh, he shanked it. Oh, look at that line, ladies and gentlemen. Oh, boy, is he out of sync.
Just before we start this podcast, I just want to have a message from one of our sponsors. One of our main sponsors is Apeiron Clothing, where you can get premium golf wear at discounted prices. Check out our website at www.apeiron-clothing.com. Enjoy the podcast.
Welcome back to another episode of the Bogey Boys podcast.
You're joined here by your host, Kevin and Mark. This is season 3, episode 26, I believe.
I think you're right.
What was we going to call it again?
We agreed Heroic Hovland.
Heroic Hovland.
Because last week it was Victorious Victor.
Heroic Hovland, and it was. And he is now a hero.
He's victorious as well.
And so he was victorious.
So arguments for both of those names this week, to be fair. But yeah, what a guy.
Honestly.
What a guy.
It was. We'll get into it in a minute. Let's talk. Any golf news?
Well, we left the podcast last week, didn't we? Where me and you were going to take on Vaughan and Liam. At Hillside. So should we talk about that first?
Not really.
Sorry about me.
No, go on.
I've got some defence, haven't I, with me back. But yeah, so we played. Kev made a solid par on the first. That was good enough to take the first hole.
Yeah.
I had two putts for the win on the second. And
I lost two balls on the second hole. Out of nowhere.
Yeah. I lost the ball on the first. So we were doing well for our brand new Pro Vs anyway.
Yeah, that was great.
I had a birdie putt on the second and come off with a bogey. Three putt. Unlike me.
Yeah.
We stayed one up and then pretty much back and forth the whole way then, wasn't it? I hit a shot on the third, my back went. Never recovered from it.
Yeah.
And it's still sore to this day, you know. Wasn't even a fake in the injury, yeah, but we lost 3-2 in the end, didn't we?
We did. It was unfortunate, but
Hillside's looking great though, isn't
it? Oh, it was fantastic. It's just a shame. I played solid both nines, really. I just had two holes where I lost ollies and
yeah. You did. Obviously, the work that you're putting in at the Cheshire Golf Academy is working well, isn't it?
Do you know what? Like, it's starting to click a little bit, and then I think me chipping confidence is growing a little bit. It's just a couple of mental mistakes here and there. Like, not even mental mistakes, more wrong choice off the tee.
Yeah.
When I'm just flying high on confidence with the driver or with a certain club, just thinking, this is a 4-iron, this or this is something. Like, on the 15th of Hillside, that was a 4-iron all day, wasn't it?
Yeah, it probably was, yeah.
Instead of trying to go round the corner when I'm at the fade and it's a dogleg left.
Still made birdie, though?
No, the 15th. I lost my ball.
Oh, sorry, yeah, you hit that. Yeah, you didn't go over the corner, yeah. I know what you're saying.
So it's just little things like that.
I was thinking of 17.
Sorry. Oh, yeah, just little things like that where it's... I just need to sort of think a bit more.
Yeah, but game management comes with playing on the course, doesn't it?
No, it does, yeah.
Because I say your course management, you take feedback and you learn every time you play.
Yeah.
So I could have done this differently, could have done that differently. You can't really map out how your course management's being when you're playing on the range, can you? That's more about
I've been playing a little bit more now. So at that round of Hillside, I felt like things were coming and then I played on the Friday or the Thursday, I played Formby Hall and then three putted the last, like I had an eagle put on the last, three putted it. For one over, I think that could have been level par.
Yeah.
And then I played Lancaster on Saturday.
Oh, yeah, with Chappie, yeah.
With Adam Chapman, a Peter athlete, yeah. We were playing with a couple of lads from, I think they're called the CGA, and like the group of lads, and they're just like basically a little society, and then they just go around different things, and they have a thing called the Cider Cup every year, where they just go and get swatted, it's belter. But they were all a good group of lads, and Chappie invited me down, so I went down and he wasn't fully on his game because he was given six shots back and like he was playing against lads who had 32 shots and stuff and he didn't give up but he was just arsing around a bit and he got unlucky a couple of times but then I was beating him. I was one under through nine beating him and he was like, so I'm going to turn it on now. And then 10th was into wind. And I looked at the arc, it said 7-iron, and I was like...
The 10th's only a short par 4, though, isn't it?
No, it's quite long, up the hill.
Oh, I'm thinking of a different course. Yeah, come on, carry on.
And then it's like driver 7-iron, and it was into the wind when we played it as well.
Oh, I know 10, yeah.
Yeah, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then the like the little weird par three green is like left. You know, the little like 120 yarder.
Like 14 or something.
Yeah, like on the yeah. So I bushnelled that and got all ready to hit and I had 7 iron out. And then I seen the lad from further behind me going at the green. I was like, oh my God, that's the wrong green. I was like, wow.
So talk about course management. There's fuck all you can do if you're doing that.
I know, exactly. But then it changed me aim at aimed at the actual green. But then it was 10 yards shorter. So I was thinking, 7 iron's not really the club if I was going to hit 7 iron to that one.
Yeah.
But then the Arcos was still saying 7 iron. And I was like, and I just changed it 8 iron, come up like 10 yards short. I was like, oh, and it was like,
you have a tendency for doing that.
I know. I don't know why I don't listen to it.
Yeah.
It's like, it's right.
Stubborn ass.
Not even that. Like, it's just, it's so right on the interwind shots.
The thing is, though, you have a go at me for not using the Arcos.
I know.
And then you argue the case back against,
yeah, I know,
Arcos.
But you know what? I do listen to it, just not all the time.
I think that's evidence that you should listen to it.
Because it's
all
on
the
downwind holes. It doesn't account for the fly, but on the interwind, it does. If you know what I mean. Like, I had a par three downwind. Like, yeah, it was telling me to hit 8 iron, and I did, and I flew the green. You know,
okay,
what I mean?
Yeah,
and then it all depends on pin position as well.
Yeah, I suppose.
So it's one of them, but it's, listen, on that occasion, I should have listened to me, Arcos, and I didn't, and that cost me my first bogey, and then going in, like, Chappie started making a few birdies, like, I had another bogey, and I was like, oh my, like, just didn't get up and down on three of the par fives where, like, they were two of them were easy, one was hard, like, they were routine, but the chips were good, but they just, like, do you know how slopey them greens are?
Yeah.
Remember that way that lad had that albatross?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I chipped it up quite high, and it rolled, and it just kept rolling. And I was like, even Chappers was saying, like, that was a great chip, that it just rolled on. Then I've missed the two coming back. Bogeyed 17, which was a bit of an error off the tee, and then birdied the last for level. So I was like, it was a great round all overall, but there was still, I was in control of the golf ball, just making a few little mistakes. It was nice.
Yeah, yeah, but if you know you're playing well and you're just making those mistakes, you can eradicate them, can't you?
No, definitely.
It's when you don't know, when you're hitting it both ways, you don't know why. But if you're not doing that.
Well, that's it. Like, I was, since I've been to see John O'Neill at the Cheshire Golf Academy, like, it hasn't half helped what I've been doing. I've been going the range, hitting a few balls, and I just feel like I'm getting back to me.
One thing I noticed when we played Hillside was, like, your short game and your chipping. You just look like, it looks like a totally different game you're playing. Like, your chipping was always very wristy, wasn't it? And, like, that the way it looked like a shorter version. Yeah, it looked a shorter version of your full swing. But now, it just, I don't know, I feel as though it's a lot more turny than wristy.
Yeah, well, that's because I've took the wrists out.
Yeah.
Because of Mark Hyde. I went to see Mark Hyde for the pitching, anything. But that's just what's weird, though. Only on the hard ground I do that. With the softer ground, you still need that bit of wrist to get the pop.
Yeah.
I don't know, it's mad. I'm just, like, proper figuring out what works for me.
Nice.
And it's a really good, great time for me.
Sounds fantastic.
Any
Not
other
a good
golf
time
from
for
you?
Me? No, my back's being fucked.
Oh, shit, yeah.
We've got a tea time at West Lancs this Wednesday, haven't we, for half eight. So, to be honest, it is easing up. Today's probably the best day. I've just been doing a bit of physio on a few stretches and each morning waking up. When I wake up, it doesn't hurt. It's just really, really stiff.
Yeah.
But I haven't swung a golf club, so that's when it might hurt again. So, what I'll do is
You need a little yoga tomorrow night, you?
Yeah, I need to. Do you know what it is? It's because I've been so static, like, because we've been so busy with everything, with the brand and the business and stuff, and other work commitments and obviously newborn baby and that. I just haven't really done any exercising at all. And I think I really need to prioritise even just half an hour to an hour a day, where even if I just go for a run and do a bit of stretching or just do something, because I'm like a fucking tin man, stiff as fuck.
Speaking about the brand and the business, Apeiron Clothing is the official sponsor of the Local Lad podcast.
Yeah.
Where we done a podcast.
We did, yeah. Our first ever, yeah. First ever, opposite
ends
of
the table.
Mic, yeah, it was. It was good, though. I really enjoyed it.
I did, to be honest.
And I think
I enjoyed watching you speak. It was great.
You know what I'm like, lads. Just fucking give me
like, do you know what, I know what you're thinking. Oh, my God, I'm rambling here. So then I, like, can't look at the host, so I'm like looking up on the YouTube video. I'm just thinking, when's he going to give me a go here?
You need to just give me the Al shoulder badge.
I did a couple of times. But...
Kick under the
nah,
under
it's,
the
it was Boston. Like, I thought you spoke dead well and you come across great.
We both did. Yeah, mm-hmm. I think it's it just shows, because when you're passionate about something, it's one of them, isn't it? You know, we really are passionate about what we're doing. So I think that came across in the podcast, and the feedback's been great off people who've listened to it that we know and have fed into us and said, look, you know, half of the people who had listened to it didn't know exactly what we were doing. So that's why it's good to do them podcasts. It's all right us coming on our own show and talking about it, but sometimes that can be a bit, you know, like, it's hard to talk about yourself on your own show, isn't it? But when you're on somebody else's and they're asking you questions and they're interested in what you're actually doing and you can give that information out, I think it bodes well for us, yeah.
It's nice to find that, like, some of the questions he was asking, we just take them hows and whys for granted, but then there's actually a great story behind them.
Yeah,
100%. which is good. But speaking of, one of the questions that he did ask about was the Apeiron athlete/management company. Chappers, who we played with, shot 57 at Windermere Golf Club last week.
Yeah.
With 25 shots on the front nine, 3 eagles, 3 birdies, 3 pars.
Seeing the cards.
What
fucking
is awesome. That about? Level par back, 9 the chopper. But like, and then we had another, didn't we have another win this week? Didn't?
I know Tim Ford was back playing on the PGA North event. I know Paul Kinney has been out playing on the PGA North event as well. Not sure if Crofty played in this latest one.
No.
Joe Brooks nearly was in contention in the final round on clutch again. I think he finished top 10 or 6 or something, and he even put a post out saying that, like, it's a bit frustrating for him at the moment, but his game's good, and you can tell.
You can see that, can't you? Can see the reflection in his scores.
He's up there week in, week out, yeah. Obviously, Tartan Tour, Chappie again, finished second, one shot off the lead.
Yeah.
So I think he's up to 10th in the order of merit. Now, you said he's got another challenge tour start.
Yeah,
has he?
I think he has. Yeah, I don't know if that's hush-hush like, but whatever, it's out now. France, yeah.
Is it? Yeah, I might have to edit that.
No, leave it in. It's Q School as well this week. That's where he is. He's down at Q School.
Oh, does that start this week?
Well, he's got a couple of, it's like a pre-qualifying one. So you've got to play 4 rounds.
Yeah.
And then in 6 weeks, you play another 4 rounds. And then in a couple of weeks after that, you play
six
rounds or something. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So this is pre-prequels.
I don't actually know what it is, but it's DP World qualifying schools.
Right. Okay. So because based on rankings, isn't it, in the world and stuff where you've got to start from?
Yeah.
So maybe, yeah. Even though he has been playing well, he's had a challenge tour start and he's doing what he's doing. Maybe. Yeah, he's had to go in at that end. But that's a lot of golf, isn't it?
It is, but it's spread out. I thought it's quite spread out. I think it's that 6 rounds thing. But he was telling me a stat that he's only shot over par twice this year.
Do you know what? We've obviously kept an eye on him every round. And, you know, it just seems like every round he's 3 or 4 under. Minimum.
I think he's like 100 and something under par, you know?
Yeah, that's fantastic, isn't it?
Like, he dobbed it round in 200 on Saturday. Like,
it is. I've got some interesting statistics about obviously Todd Clements more than anybody, but about what we spoke about on that podcast with the local lads, where, you know, it does take 4, 5, 6 years to find your feet at the highest level before you can really have a go from a confidence perspective, from anything. Obviously, Chappie's been at it for a while now, took a step from playing full time, didn't he? And now he's back at it full time. So,
yeah.
You know, we'll come on to that a bit later. But yeah, I think the athletes are doing really well.
No,
representing as well. I know, obviously, we mentioned Jack McPhail's got a few starts. Jack Brooks turned pro and now he's had a few pro starts playing well. So yeah, onwards and upwards for the lads.
All right.
Golf news. Have you got any golf news?
Just the Ryder Cup thing. I was going to leave that till the end.
Okay. Well, also, I've got is the Solheim Cup. Oh, obviously, we spoke about it last week. The picks got decided. So obviously, as you'd expect, Sweden's Madalena Sagström and Scotland's Gemma Driver both got picks, which you would expect because they're the only two Europeans inside the top 50 in the world. But what was a surprise was 51st in the world, Ewert Shadoff, who's been obviously playing.
Jodie Ewert Shadoff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's been playing. English girl, she's been playing really well this season.
I've seen her name up and about. Like,
wasn't she doing well at the Open? She leading the Open? Was that? Or she wasn't leading, but she was doing well at the Open, wasn't she?
Not too sure.
But anyway, she's 51 in the world, and she didn't get a pick. They went for Christine Pedersen and Carolina Hedwell, who are 114th and 120th.
But they played before, though.
Yeah. Yeah, they've both played the experience.
It's one of them, isn't it?
Yeah.
It is. But it's just mad because they do usually take a little gamble, don't they? But
I think 51 in the world as well. You're not exactly a chopper, are you? So you'd think if you're looking at world, from a world ranking perspective, you know, but I think that was the only really like shock in the selections is that she never got the call up. But obviously Christine Pedersen's a fantastic golfer, so you know I'm sure Pedersen knows what she's doing.
Aye. Do you want to get into the Birdie Bogey Bust straight away, or do you want to start Tour Champs?
No, let's go into it. Birdie Bogey Bust, yeah.
It's that time again, y'all. The Birdie Bogey Bust, the Birdie Bogey Bust, Birdie Bogey Bust.
So my birdie is Team Europe, the strength it looks like it's got in depth.
Okay, yeah.
So you've obviously got Hovland, and then you've got good performance from Yannick Paul, Aberg, McIntyre, Nicolai Højgaard. It's very, very tasty. I think mathematically, on the second round of the Czech reel, 20 people could qualify automatically.
Yeah. Well,
depending on how they finished.
There's six now. There's six now. After last week's event for this one, Omega Masters, there's six players that can still automatically qualify for those spots. So,
but how good's that though? That 20 can?
Yeah, 20 could.
A negative because they think no one's actually cemented it?
I think
strength and depth. Yeah, they'll go with strength and
strength
depth.
I think if you look at the Tour Champs this week, you know, Hovland first, Rory fourth, Tommy sixth, Fitzpatrick ninth, Straka 14th, Hatton 16th, Ram 18th. And Ram 18th was only because of such a poor final round. You know, that's seven of the Team Europe, basically, because Straka's more than likely going to get a pick now after that finish. That's seven of the 12 players finishing in the top 20 in the PGA Tour this season.
That's what you want, isn't it?
It's solid, you know. And then obviously looking at other players, Bobby Mack is holding that final spot at the moment.
Yeah.
Shane Lowry missed the cut. Is he going to get a pick? Don't know, based on experience, but it could be like we just spoke about in the Solheim Cup there. You know, those getting picks over Jody, was that because of the experience rather than the actual raw ability and how they're playing? So, yeah, I think it'd be interesting because if you look at the six players who can still automatically qualify, Bobby McIntyre is the one who's holding that final spot. Yannick Paul, Adrian Maronk, Victor Perez, Rasmus Højgaard, and Adrian Ortegi.
Mm.
So in order for them to win, Bobby McIntyre and Yannick Paul will both qualify if they win the event this week.
Yeah.
But if McIntyre finishes second, he can still be caught if either Maronk or Yannick Paul win. Yannick Paul needs to finish a tie for second with just one player or better to have a chance. Victor Perez needs to finish second place alone or to win to have a chance. And Rasmus Højgaard and Adrian Ortegi both need to win to have a chance. They're the only six that can qualify at this event in that final spot. The first two spots were held by Ram and Rory. They've qualified through that way.
So what happens if none of them do well and some, like say Aberg or like someone else does well?
No, if they can't, mathematically, it's only them six.
I know,
that
but it throws a little spanner in, doesn't it, if Aberg went and won this week?
Well, yeah,
definitely.
I think
I'm saying it now as well after watching this week.
Yeah, he's class, isn't he?
He's belter.
I think so. And again, it goes back to what we spoke about in the past. Like Ludvig Aberg, we spoke on the podcast, the Local Lab podcast, about you needing 4, 5, 6 years to sort of, unless you're a really raw talent and you come straight on and do well. If you look at like Todd Clements and his pathway, which I'll talk about when we get onto the Czech Masters in a bit. But if you look at his pathway, it's took him 4 or 5 years to get to this point. But yeah, he's been trending since last year on the Challenge Tour. Ludvig Aberg and Alex Fitzpatrick are both players who've come out of college and are just ready.
Mm.
Challenge Tour win straight away for Alex Fitzpatrick. Ludvig Aberg getting top 10 finishes straight away on the PGA Tour. A top 5 finish there on his first ever European Tour start this week. So, you know, that 4 or 5 years that people outside of the college system don't get, they're taking a lot longer to sort of find the feet on the tours, whereas
that
college system is getting
it's the structure in it in the college, like
that's the getting them ready. Yeah, the discipline, some getting them ready. Yeah,
it's like you can go and say to, like, obviously Todd Clements has done very well and he's won and it's brilliant. But like, if you'd asked them honestly and said, look, over these last 5 years, every day when you've been going the golf course or going to the gym or doing what you got to do, have you been putting, would you say, as much effort in as you probably could have? Yeah. If you were in a college system around teams and mates, it's lonely out there, isn't it?
It is.
College, them college, you got mates and all that.
Well, that's it. And if you do well in college, like Alex and Abig did, then, you know, you're more inclined to get picked up. And the PGA Tour is supporting that college system.
And you're getting flu everywhere and all that.
Exactly. Yeah. You're living the lifestyle straight away.
It's boss.
And you know the golf courses. You know, if you finish in the top 10 in the PGA universities, you know you're going to be getting certain starts on the PGA Tour. So
exactly,
you're sort of ready for it. And now with the guaranteed earnings of $500,000 when you get a PGA Tour card, financially you're half secured. So I think they've got that box there, whereas over on the European side, if you're just starting at one of the lower tier events, like, you know, you're playing on the Alps Tour, you're playing Clutch Tour, you're playing Tartan Tour, you're playing those feeder tours, but the level of golfers playing there are unbelievable. And you're starting from that.
Exactly. The pool's deep, innit?
It is. And
wide.
You know, yeah, so that's just, yeah, I think, obviously, I don't even know what my point was there. We were talking about the do we give it a bigger pick, I suppose, was the question, wasn't it? I don't know, what do you think?
I'm just seeing that the conversation is opening up now more than just you.
That's not just...
So, welcome. You can welcome us in if it's not too much trouble.
No, crack on, get in, get involved.
What's your birdie?
Mine was what we spoke about earlier. It's doing our first podcast and the reception received. Belter. Yeah, just gave us an opportunity as a business to tell people about our journey over the last 3 years. And, you know, we're not just the podcast. We've got a lot more to the brand than what we're trying to do. And just the feedback that we got off the back of the podcast and people showing a lot of interest in what we're doing. You know, we've had a number of conversations off the back of it of people interested working with us now. So, yeah, it's just... just the future of our brand is my birdie this week after the back of that.
Yeah, and if anyone listening has got any other podcasts or people that are neither guest or anywhere we can go and tell our story, let us know, because we're always up for the opportunity. The cherry's being popped.
Exactly.
And let's go, baby.
I'll let you have a few words this time.
Yeah, cheers, mate. My bogey, moving on, is Hovland, basically, apart from Xander having a little charge early on.
He got to win in three, didn't he?
When he held that putt on 14, it was dead. It was game over, wasn't it?
It was, yeah.
And longest putt of the week as well.
I know.
For par, it was just stones.
Yeah, it was. And you know what? That's mine as well. It's the anti-climax of the event. And the way that you're agreeing with me on A-Big, I'm agreeing with you on this format's just fucking shocking.
Is that the bust?
Yeah, it's my bust, yeah. This
is what I was trying to say.
Like, it is, yeah. The fact that Keegan Bradley and Adam Schenk, no disrespect to them, after 36 holes have got a chance to be the number one player on the PGA Tour is a farce. Do you know what I mean?
Well, Morikawa had the chance. He's had a doghead season.
I know. I just think that to put everything on the line, and I know they talk about all this money that you win and everything, but even as Hovland said in after his tournament's finished, like, he's not really asked about the money. He's not in it for the money. He's all right saying that now that he's got the money, but he's more about winning tournaments and being
they're not.
The best.
Like the top level of golf, like they said on the commentary, what a time! Like McGinley said it, and you could feel a little bit of stink in his voice. Like he was like, "What a time to be a great player," and like you could feel it what he was saying, because like 20 million's ass-wiping money at them for them, innit?
It is, yeah. It's
nothing.
That's what I mean. I think you look at the money that these guys are earning, the ones that all get to the tour championships, like none of them need money.
No, everyone it's good for them to have 10 million plus.
Yeah, it's good for them. Everybody loves money. Do you know what I mean? It's good for them to have money for the families, for any other business they want to get into as they get older. The more capital you've got, the easier that'll be. But they're there to win, aren't they? To win the tournaments. And if you're an Adam Schenk,
I mean, that's what they say, isn't it? Like, tell them to go and do it for free then and see what happens.
On the flip side, it is. We'll then go over and support the European Tour and play those events.
Exactly.
But then the other argument is, well, we're all on the PGA Tour, so we want to beat the best. Like winning a European Tour event against lesser caliber of players is probably not as satisfying to them as Hovland beating Rory, Ram, Morikawa, all these guys, Scheffler.
Well, is it about wins or is it about beating the caliber of player.
Yeah, I suppose like Hovland will take more off winning the Tour Championship than he will winning the D&D Czech Masters, wouldn't he?
Yeah, well, this is the issue, isn't it? Because one, you're getting 300 grand and the other, you're getting 20 million. it's a no-brainer, isn't it?
But yeah, that was me bust really as well. Similar to you, you know, Russell Henley, Adam Schenk, Keegan Bradley and Sepp Straka all finished above the Masters champion. So what you're basically saying is that they were all better than John Rahm this season in the standings.
Like, the top 10 doesn't really reflect the top 10 best players of the season, does it?
No.
Like, no disrespect to Tommy, but he's sixth there above Scheffler and above Rory.
Yeah. I think, to be fair to Tommy, I reckon Tommy was definitely top 10, though.
Yeah, 1,000,000% top 10.
I don't think he's above Rory and Scheffler. But the same way, none of them are above Rahm. He's had a bad week.
Go on, then.
Yeah. I agree with you.
Fleetwood had a better season than John Rahm. Victor Hovland, okay, he won twice. Maybe, but...
Well, let's move on to the Tour Championships and talk about them, because I would argue that Victor Hovland probably is the number one, in a sense, because... You say absolutely not, but if you look at Hovland's events this season, 23 events, 23 cuts made, 18 top 25 finishes, four wins.
There's the problem stat.
Four wins, what?
18 25, top 25s.
He's had four wins, though.
Yeah, three in the last 8 weeks.
What's that got to do with it? Because
it's all just come at the right time, and if them three wins a couple of months ago, he's nowhere near the top. Look at John Rahm. He had four wins in 3.5 months.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is...
And a major.
Yeah, but if I know that, but what I'm saying is if you look at the whole season, right, you can't argue that Scheffler has had a better season than Hovland now.
We can.
How?
Well, he's won a few times.
So is Hovland.
Yeah, but it's at the time. It's the time and it's too much emphasis. This is why it's fucked. It's too much emphasis on these last three events.
Yeah, but Hovland has arguably took on the top 50 players in the world at that point, because they're the top 50 got into the Tour Championships and won, and then took on the top 30 in the world.
Yeah, but on the other flip side, he's only had to beat 50 players and he's only had to beat 30, the pony events.
Yeah.
I know they are the best 50, but the best 50 usually play in other ones where other people can come through the fields and majors. There's 100 and how many players in majors? 180.
155
or whatever. Yeah. Like, I know that I get what you're saying. It's the best 50, but the majors got the best 50 and plus another load of people who you can shoot the lights out.
But if you look at him in the majors, he finished second in the PGA, finished seventh at the Masters, 19th in the US Open, 13th in the Open.
Yeah, no,
so he's not crabbed it round.
He's had a great season.
He could have won the PGA.
I just don't think that he's the number one player.
No.
I think he's just had a solid last 2 weeks.
Yeah. So who do you think then, if we looked at the...
I don't know. Rory's had 10 consecutive top 10s there.
Yeah.
Which is, again, you're not getting it over the line. Or what he did? Did he win one?
Events this year, I think he's won two, yeah.
I mean, in the last 10 events.
Oh, the last 10 events. I think he did, yeah.
He won something, didn't he? But...
can't remember off the top of my head, no.
Yeah, so you've got... Scheffler's had the best ball striking.
We always said, didn't we? Rahm, Scheffler, and Rory were the three.
Yeah.
For the last 3 or 4 weeks, that's what we've said. Them three, nobody else can contend and compete. But then, obviously, Hovland's done exactly what Cantley done: win the BMW Championships, win the Tour Championships, and take the crown. When arguably there's other players who are better than him. So that's a couple of times that's happened now.
That's what that format sets up for.
Yeah,
it sets up for the puncher's chance.
Mm-hmm.
And anyone can win it, as you said, Adam Schenk. It's not based on... I haven't got the full stats on Scheffler this season yet, but he's had the best ball striking season since records began. Obviously, his putting hasn't been the best, but when it was, he was coming second and coming last in putting.
Yeah,
like that's a dominant season.
No, it is. It is a dominant season, but golf's not just about hitting the ball onto the green, is it? Do you know what I mean?
But Scheffler's also getting the ball in the hole as well in other tournaments. Like, how many wins has he had?
Yeah.
He had a few wins this season, hadn't he?
Three or four, yeah.
So, it's a great time for golf, as we always say, but I just don't think that... If that was just two regular PGA tournaments where you're only getting... And it's not all formatted, then Scheffler wins hands down, money-wise. Yeah. He beat Rahm's record in May. for the leading money the year before. Yeah. Like, come on. I know the money's is higher, but it's... I think Scheffler should be crowned.
Scheffler number one.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Most money wins, I think. So everyone's there to get the same amount of money. And if you want to play all your big events, if you're a top 90 or whatever, you get in them at the signature events
top
next 70,
year. Yeah.
Top 70, sorry. Get in the signature, whatever they're called, designated.
Signature,
whatever.
Yeah.
Then I think if you win the most money that season, then you win the whole thing.
Yeah, so based on money.
Yeah, because like I was saying last week...
That's the way it used to be, though, wasn't it? Like when PJ had that massive season and ended up winning.
Well, the Premier League can end, can't it, in three, four weeks before.
Yeah.
Like, then they win. Like, imagine City being...
Well, that's probably why they wanted to... That's why probably
no, it's
why they wanted...
No, because the Americans need action. Like, that's why the football hasn't really grew big in America, because you can have a nil-nil, and Americans can't take that. They want, like... 55, 65, 107 versus 107 end-to-end games, baseball, hockey, American football, basketball. That's what they need.
Yeah. Fair point. Yeah.
So that's why they've changed their format, and unlucky Scotty, mate.
Basically, yeah.
That's what I think it is, yeah? How are you fixed on it?
I mean, I like I said before, I think there is an argument based on how Hovland's finished the season and how his seasons went, that, you know, you win four times in the PGA Tour, you can't really argue and say, oh, he doesn't deserve to win, to be the number one.
Who's won four times?
Victor Hovland.
Four times, has he?
Four times, yeah.
I thought he only won three.
He won the Hero Challenge. Then he won the one that he had a playoff. Was it middle of the season? I can't remember which one it was. He had a playoff and won. Then he won the BMW, and then he's won the Tour Champs.
Interesting. I thought he only won three.
Yeah. Well, if you, I don't know if you count the Tour Champs as a win, like, but
it's got to be a win, hasn't it?
Yeah, he's definitely won four.
Yeah.
Hero Challenge at the beginning of the season was a win, wasn't it?
Yeah, he's won three in the last eight starts, hasn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah, so yeah, four. Yeah, I know what you're saying.
So I think one of them was a runner-up in the PGA Championships as well. So you could have had four wins and a major win.
Yeah, well then...
And then you'd argue. I know he didn't get it over the line.
If he won the major, he probably would have went to the top of the money list anyway.
No, I know.
After all this.
Yeah, no, I look, yeah, but that's where I'm coming from with the Hovland. Is like, I get what you're saying is that, you know, and we've said it, it's them three all along, them top three. They've been like that for the last 2 years, and Hovland's always been probably a Cantlay, Xander Schauffele in that sort of category where, like,
Sam
you're not,
Burns, you, like a
yeah, you're not in the top three, but you're 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. You know what I mean? You're one of them. He's never really had this consistent run. Now he's won three times in eight starts. You can't really count him out. Just because it's come at the end of the season, you can't say, well, just because you've done these three wins at the end of the season, because when Scheffler won three early on at the beginning of the season, nobody was saying he doesn't deserve to be world number one.
It's not the wins like at the end of the season. Like that's the main gripe, even though it does, the last event is the worst one of it. The last event's the worst culprit.
Yeah, because you started
but he still
there.
Would have won the event if it was all level.
Well, he'd been tied with Xander Schauffele.
Yeah, but they've been Schauffele 19 under, so playoff. And then what I think is that if you remodeled it, Chef and then Hovland won them last two events, he might be close to Scheffler. Or I don't know. I haven't looked at it. But it's not the fact of Hovland. Hovland doesn't really bring the major gripe out. It's if a Schenko or someone won.
No, I know.
That would have been horrific.
Yeah.
Hovland, okay. You can, as you say, half argue it, but imagine Morikawa or Schenko.
And that's the
Keegan
problem
Bradley
with it.
Won,
that's the problem with it. Yeah, after two rounds of golf there, you know, Adam Schenk, Keegan Bradley, Colin Morikawa all had the chance to be the best player ahead of.
Like, Morikawa chopped a massive season long deficit in one round. A season's worth of money and work. Like, you don't know. I can't remember. I should have really got this up, but Morikawa was miles behind money wise. In one round, he's level with Scheffler and surpassed Rory and Rahm.
Yeah.
And it's like one good round. Do you really deserve to be there after?
Yeah, having one good round.
Like,
yeah.
It's you were starting on, what was he, one under?
Yeah.
Like 20 odd. And then bink, all of a sudden he's leading. It's like, wow.
Yeah.
So.
Let's just hope that they can turn up on the Ryder Cup this year.
Oh,
then, because,
telling
you know,
you, mate.
We're going to find out tomorrow, aren't we? who's there going to be the Team USA team.
It's today, I think, 28th.
Oh, is it today, yeah, is it? Yeah. So we'll find out this week who's Team USA.
I was going to say one more thing or two more things. I was on eBay, ready on the button. If Xander had held any more putts, I was just buying that putter, whatever, exactly the same as what he had. And what did you think, interestingly, of Monahan being booed?
Well, you can understand it, can't you? Because a lot of the things that he said and a lot of the things the players have come out and said, like, you know, it was more the when he sat down with the PIF on that news show and all the players found out through Twitter after everything that had gone on, after everything that people had done. I know that heat's died down a little bit now, but there'll still be some animosity behind, like, you know, how have you done all this without letting the players know? Have you done all this behind the players' back? Because the PGA Tour, you would imagine, from the outside looking in, they've always been, do you know what? Fair play to Monahan. He's standing his ground. He's holding his own. I know a lot of people don't like what he's doing, but there's other people who do like what he's doing. He's saying, do you know what? You're saying the PGA Tour is the PGA Tour's number one, and you're backing it to the tilt. And Rory obviously backed that as well. But then I think he'd lost a lot of fans when he'd done that, so you can understand why.
No, of course, yeah. I just thought it was interesting.
You understand why some people have booed him, potentially, because I know a few people are calling for him to give it up, aren't they? So,
no, I loved it, like.
Yeah.
Like, that's why I was like, I brought him. I proper loved it.
Yeah.
Before we move to the Czech Real Masters as well, I've got a couple of questions for you.
All right, okay. Quiz time.
I only got two.
Okay. Literally a couple then.
Yeah. It was only going to be one stat, but I thought I'd put it into a question and I found another one, so I thought I'd add that in.
Okay.
So you probably get this easy. Like, the FedEx Cup's been won 7 times by internationals. Can you name them all?
Oh, God. Rory.
Yeah.
Hovland, obviously.
Yeah.
John Rahm?
No.
No, okay. Now Stenson's won one, Annie.
Yeah.
Justin Rose won that time, Tiger won.
Yeah.
Did Vijay win one when he won that big season?
Yeah.
How many was there?
There was 7.
And that's 5?
Yeah. I know the FedEx has been won 7 times by internationals.
And how many players?
I'm not telling you.
So that's 5 players, isn't it?
Yeah.
Well, Rory's won it twice. No, Rory's won it 3 times.
Yeah.
Is that it?
Yeah.
Yes. Okay, now. Are you looking at me then? Right, okay.
Right, Russell Henley, the straightest hitter on the PGA Tour.
Okay.
74% or 75% of accuracy, whatever it is.
Right, okay.
Straightest hitter.
Okay, yeah, he leads the
number one.
Yeah, yeah.
PGA Tour. Where would he rank on the LPGA Tour with his accuracy?
Fucking hell. 45th?
77th. Mad, I don't know. So just seeing that stat and thought I'd bring it to you, powered by Apeiron Clothing. Oh no, powered by Stat Betting. Sorry.
Yeah, we can't take everything.
Go on then. Let's get into the real check.
So obviously I just wanted to highlight Todd Clements, really.
Exactly.
It just because it rings home so true about what we've spoke about and why we wanted to set up the Apeiron Athlete program and try and support these guys a bit more. So since 2018 on the DP World Tour up to 2022, Todd had only had 8 DP World Tour starts and earned a total of €30,000 in prize money over that period. So that's a period of 4 years, yeah? Since gaining his playing rights in 2023, so he earned his card for the Challenge Tour last year, he's played 22 events this year, made 12 cuts, and obviously now he's got his maiden victory. So that's his 5th season where he's had a start on either the Challenge Tour or the DP World Tour. Not sure when he actually turned pro. I think he's been a pro for longer than that, but from his very first start, 2018. So if we look on the Challenge Tour, in 2018, he made 2 Challenge Tour starts and didn't earn anything. He had 12 starts in 2019, 10 starts in 2020, and 19 starts in 2021, and averaged around €30,000 per season leading up to 2022. So the reason I want to mention this is we always talk, don't we, about like needing a good few years in order to bed in and feel your way around the tours and get comfortable with the travel and being alone and all that type of stuff. So obviously leading up to 2022, that's when he had his best season on the Challenge Tour. He'd only played 30 times in four seasons across both the Challenge Tour and the DP World Tour leading into 2022.
Yeah.
And then across these past two seasons, he's played 29 times, winning obviously last season on the Challenge Tour and now winning on the DP World Tour. So it goes to show you that, like, exactly what we said on the podcast, and that the reason we do this appear on it is appear on athlete program. His journey and his start is exactly the reason why, you know, players need time and they need to be patient with themselves
as
well.
Yeah.
Because he spent from 2008 up to 2022, you know, earning probably enough money to get him by and keep him going, 30 odd grand a year and whatever else he's earning through other things, you don't know, but he's doing well enough to sort of keep his card on the tour and keep playing, and then eventually you get comfortable and then bang, you get your win on the Challenge Tour, you get your DP World Tour start, you play on the DP World Tour, you get comfortable on that tour now that you're a winner, and obviously goes and wins again with an unbelievable final round.
Honestly, 63, so 65, 69, 69, 63 to win by one.
Yeah.
And he coasted home as well. Like, it wasn't, he was a few back starting the final round, wasn't he? And then come out with three in a row, then three in a row again, 6, 7, 8, three in a row again, 11, 12, 13, and then coasted home.
Yeah.
So it's obviously to set the clubhouse lead, and then no one could catch him, which is brilliant. And it's just, as you say, it's quality what he does.
And that's, but people looking at that will think that this win's come out the blue. But it's pretty clear that,
well,
it hasn't.
Even the newspapers are saying that.
But I think that's what I mean. But I don't think this has come out the blue.
No, it hasn't.
I think this has been, like, you know, if you look at his season last season, he won once on the Challenge Tour when he had his most starts and played his most consistent golf. He's had the pretty much exactly the same starts this year on the DP World Tour, and pretty much made the exact same amount of cuts, a bit less, I think. A couple less. But I know he's obviously playing against a higher caliber of player, but like, the way that he was playing and the way that his Challenge Tour season went last year, you would say that eventually he is going to challenge, maybe not win, but he's going to start playing and competing a bit more. So I just think, I don't think it was a massive shock. It's his maiden win. It's his first season on tour. So you don't expect him to win going in there. He's probably big odds, even going into the final round, being so many back. Nobody expected him to win, but I don't think it's a big shock as people make out.
Definitely not. And he's a recent follower of the podcast as well. So
he is,
a legend.
Yeah, he is a legend, yeah.
Any more to add on the Czech reel, or are we just going to talk Clemency?
I was just going to say, obviously, Alex Fitzpatrick and Aberg again. I know we keep going on about them, but it just illustrates...
They're the future of golf, aren't they?
It does illustrate, you know, going through that college system and how important that is if you want a fast start. So any young aspiring amateurs who are wanting to pursue a career in golf, you have got two options. You've obviously got the option to turn pro and grind it out.
Sink or swim, man.
Or, you know, and I'm not saying the success stories for everybody who goes over to the American college system. You know, here's your mate.
yours truly there.
Here's your mate. But, you know, I think the American college system, if you're playing at that level, Walker Cup and obviously top amateur, and you go over there, the proof is that you're pretty much ready to come out and compete against these guys who've been out there for years. Whereas if you do just turn professional, you're probably at a lower level from an amateur. You are going to need a bit of time, but it's just about remaining patient. And, you know, Todd Clements and Dan Brown last week, they're prime examples of if you're patient enough and you do bide your time, you know, your opportunities will come and you've just got to take them.
1,000,000%. So speaking about opportunity, right, moving on to, I just got a couple of clips from the seniors.
Okay.
Did you see what happened? Paul Guidos had a putt on the 17th for birdie.
Yeah.
A two putt would have given him a two shot lead going down the last on over Vijay Singh. And then he took four putts from 3 foot.
No.
Yeah. So a 5-putt total for a triple bogey, 6. And he was 2 shots behind Vijay Singh, who was the group in front of him.
What the fuck?
Honestly, when you see it, it's mad as well. So he hits the putt, like a 17-foot of a birdie, to like 3 foot. Bangs it past. And then bangs it back past. And then his stroke's like a little... like, it's awful, like, to 2 inches, and then just taps it in.
Has he been interviewed after it?
I didn't stay around for that.
Oh my god, it'd be interesting but to see like, what he says about that.
I just seen that, but Vijay Singh won. But absolutely mental. When you watch it, you just won't believe how
I'll have
mad
to look
it is.
At that and just see what he says after it. Yeah, I didn't know that happened. Yeah,
honestly, it's mental. But also the Asian tour in Scotland as well.
Yeah.
So Pete Baig from Formbjerg qualified to play.
Oh, brilliant.
And he was in the event. Hudson Swafford was playing. He's obviously back from injury. Loads of the live guys were playing. And it come down to Eugenio Chichara and Matt Jones, both finished 19 under par.
10-hole playoff, weren't it?
2 hours, 8 minutes, yeah. 82 holes, longest in history.
I know.
Mad that, isn't it?
He's a quality player, that Eugenio, isn't he?
Well, that's it. But it even, like, there was a... Like, Eugenio had a box, the little par, on one of the holes, and then Matt Jones chips in. It's like, it was just one of them crazy things.
It's exactly what happened to Matt Wallace, wasn't it, with Homer?
Yeah, but there's no, like... I didn't see any coverage of it. You don't see it anywhere, do you?
No, you don't, unfortunately. I think...
It's not even live, is it? It's like it's the Asian tour.
Well, I think that we will start to see that more and more because, you know, we are getting a lot of higher ranked players playing in these events now because of the live.
Because the opportunity to get to live.
Yeah, yeah. That's what I mean. You've got the international series, which is pumping more money in. I know, what's his name? Andy Ogletree's taking care of all them, isn't he?
Yeah.
I think he's number one in the rankings overall. But yeah, no, it's good that, you know, Pete's got himself an opportunity now, hasn't he, and gone that route. And you will see a lot more players taking that route now because the purses are so higher. And
the stakes are high, aren't they? Like, if you get in there and you do well, you get on to live.
Exactly.
Which is like...
Life-changing.
Life-changing.
Well, live's guaranteed money, innit?
Exactly.
You come last and you're still flying.
Rolling, innit?
So, yeah, where they say, get your PGA Tour card, now you get $500,000 guaranteed money. If you get on to live, you're getting a good few million guaranteed, aren't you?
Yeah, you come last twice and you've got more than Todd Clements won for the DP World Tour.
Yeah.
Nearly.
Yeah.
It's crazy, but I just wanted to mention that because it was a bit of funky gear going on down there with 10-hole playoffs and all that.
Right then, Omega European Masters, the last opportunity, like we mentioned before, for these guys to get into the Ryder Cup. I say there's 6 players that can do it this week. What are you thinking?
Well, It's only a short course, isn't it? 6,808 yards, but it's very mountainous, isn't it?
Yeah, tie up. The ball goes further as well, doesn't it? Because of the altitude. But yeah, I think it's one of the best ones to watch on telly, I think, because of the views. It's very picturesque, isn't it? Right in the Swiss mountains. I think a lot of the players do enjoy playing this one as well.
So I've changed my view on things here. So obviously, Rome, Rome.
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 Who's he?
Rory. Rory, Rahm, Fitzy, Tommy, Hatton, Hovland,
Sepp Straka as well after this finish, sure.
Well, there you're 6. Yeah.
I think we can pretty much say Sepp Straka as well.
Yeah, well
can't
really work like that, does it?
No, it doesn't. No, it doesn't. Sorry.
So that's your 6, and then I think Straka, McIntyre, Rasmus, Mironk, Aberg.
Oh. Hello.
And Lowry.
Oh, hello.
Yeah. So I've changed it up. I just don't think that you need a Yannick Paul in your team or a...
Well, if Yannick Paul...
Victor Perez. I know we can automatically qualify.
Yeah, you might have a choice. What about Nikolai Højgaard? You never mentioned him. He was challenging this week. He finished.
I know. Do you know what? I know he did. He did. But I've already said to you, I don't want him in my team. So I've already given the call. Sorry. What are you thinking?
I think them top 6 again. I think... Robert McIntyre, I think Shane Lowry, Sepp Straka, and then I would go for the Højgaard twins together and Aberg. So
you just take him?
I wouldn't take Mironk.
Mironk, yeah.
I know that's bad because he should definitely get in there, but I'm just looking at it from the future of the sport. The Højgaard twins are both 21. Aberg's young. I think the Højgaard twins over the last 2 years have proven that they are winners and they do belong at the top of the sport in European golf. Nikolai's gone over to America, done well.
I know it's hit and miss, isn't it? The hit and miss.
Yeah, but I just think the future of the sport is going to be them too. Ludvig Aberg, I think when Alex gets
It's not about the future of the sport. I don't think with the way we got whoop-ass last time, I think it's about getting the job done.
Yeah, but last time we picked players based on experience, and what happens? We got whoop-assed.
Yeah, but there was whoop-assed. Did I say that?
That's what you said, yeah.
As I was about to Teddy for saying it, I was thinking, oh my God, did I say that?
You said it first.
Whoop-assed. Shout that is. Oh. Yeah, so but I know we did. But they were like, as you say, based on experience, but they're like, it's based on it, the guard, as you were saying, wasn't changed. But I think there's enough players who are playing well that can sit in there as well without needing to pick too young.
So I think, obviously, Yannick Paul, Adrian Mironk, Victor Perez, Adrian Ortega, they're four of the six that I haven't picked that can automatically qualify. Out of them four, like any four, they're very similar in form and ability in wins. Like, if you can't pick all four of them, what difference does it make if you don't pick? Like, if you pick Mironk,
yeah, but they're probably having better seasons than Rasmus, and
I'd say so. But
well, they are, because obviously them two can't qualify.
I don't know. Yannick Paul's had a lot of just top 10 finishes. He's accumulated a lot of points rather than wins, whereas Rasmus and Nikolai have won.
Mm.
I don't know. Yeah, I think Yannick Paul then shows a lot more
consistency.
Consistency
is what you want in the Ryder Cup, isn't it?
I just think, and you know what, Yannick Paul is quite young as well. He's not old, and it's his. Is it his maiden season or no second season on tour, isn't it? So he's obviously a talented player.
Yeah.
There is a second season yet. So I think what's going to hold European golf in good stead moving forward, if we look at the next Ryder Cup, if Rasmus, Nicolai and Åberg have all had experience of playing in a Ryder Cup ahead of the next one, as long as they continue on the pathway that they're going now and continue to do well, you'd rather have them playing the next Ryder Cup when they're a bit older with Ryder Cup experience, is my view on it.
I'd rather have them playing with PGA Tour wins, to be honest, than just dominating, like play a challenge in FedEx, like what Tommy and Hatton do now. But as you say, but we need another, like, I don't know, I think we just need a few anchors, like a few solid players where it's like,
yeah, maybe it's come too soon for,
yeah, because
for A-Big.
We need another Paris, like, we can't be having a whistling fella.
No, definitely not.
Whoop ass, kind of.
No, you're right. Yeah. You are right.
Know. We'll
see. Matt Fitzpatrick's in the field this week as well for the European Omega Masters, so it'll be good to see how he does. Obviously, he's going to be joining Alex, who gets another invite on the DP World Tour, another opportunity to prove himself at that level. I don't think he's going to get a pick or be in the Ryder Cup, but he's definitely proven himself to be a future star, isn't he? So, obviously, Rich Mansell got married last week, so congratulations to the Mansells.
Oh, yeah.
I know Ewan and Connor Syme were at the wedding,
seeing the
picture, so they're back playing this week after celebrating the wedding. So looking forward to seeing how this one unfolds. It's the last opportunity, isn't it?
That's it. Well, it's mad the way the DP World Tour had a break, and then now like there's no PGA Tour for like a few weeks, and then there's no Live for a few weeks, and it's all DP.
Yeah, I think
we're coming up.
That's part of the partnership, but I don't think that's helped us at all. Because if we'd have had the Irish Open in that break, then we could have had the BMW PGA Championships around about now as the final one going into it. You know, you got the French Open coming up.
Is there another event for the Ryder Cup? Yeah, I thought they just went Irish. Who knows?
Not us.
Not us. We're not like we're a golf podcast or nothing.
Don't have the schedule in front of me. Let me clear this up. Le Golf National. Sorry, that's where it is. So, where did I say?
That's it, yeah. It's the Paris one, isn't it?
Yeah, Paris one. So you've got the Irish Open, BMW Champs, and then Open de France at Le Golf National. So you've got a Ryder Cup venue the week before the actual Ryder Cup. So I think
it's mad that like the America, like what the falls. When does the fall season start? When's their first? When the fourth and it's in the 22nd.
I think it's the week before the Ryder Cup. Yeah, they have a couple.
None
of
them are going to be playing the French Open, are they? None of the American team are going to be playing the Fortinet, are they?
No.
So why would any of our team want to play the French Open before it? Schedule's battered.
I don't think you're going to get people the week before the Ryder Cup playing in France and then heading over. The Ryder Cup team will be in Italy that week.
That's what I'm thinking.
Playing
but the French Open's
rounds.
A big one as well, isn't it?
Massive, yeah.
What's
it's a 3.5 million pace.
That's my bus for next week, that. Or whenever it comes, because the Americans have got all their good golf out the way, busted up, got the team together. Now they've got a month for bonding.
Yeah, I mean, the headlines in this is Ryan Fox and Mimou Lee joined defending champion Migliozzi in France. That's your headline for it. So it's not like it's Rory comes over to play the French National Open because he can't.
So yeah, that's
what I mean. That break that the European Tour had has essentially meant that they've had to cram more tournaments in at the back end of the season when them events could have been.
Why couldn't? Yeah, the French Open should have been prime time, middle of summer, right there, done.
Yeah, should have. Yeah.
So they've been in September, the week before the Ryder Cup,
and then there's more points opportunities for
and
the
there's
European.
More chance to see. It's like Luke Donald had to base his selection rushed quickly now after a break. He could have had all that time playing through to see what's going on.
Yeah.
Especially for the younger lads.
I think, yeah.
That's
I think...
disgraceful, that in my eyes, you know. I am fuming. Oh, my God.
Well, we'll have a good chat about that next week when we come. Obviously, join us next week on the show, because what we're going to be doing is looking at the PJ Tour review as a whole season. We'll be looking at the American picks for the Ryder Cup, and we'll be obviously basing our view on who we think is going to get those European picks after the final event, and looking forward to the rest of the DP World Tour season. So obviously enjoy your golf this week, and we'll catch you all soon.
Ciao.
Ladies and gentlemen, oh boy, is he on the sink.